From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Throughout the campaign season, we've invited candidates for prominent federal, state, and local offices to join us here on Connections. We prefer to have opposing candidates come on together to work through and debate the issues. Now, in some cases, we have not been able to do that. We want our listeners to know that we did ask Senators Rich Funke and Joe Robach to come on alongside their opponents, and they both declined. We offered the opportunity for Senators Funke and Robach to pick any date that fit their schedules before the election, but so far both have declined to come on the show. This hour, we will divide it in two, essentially, and we're going to hear from the challengers in those state Senate races, starting with Jen Lunsford. She's a Democrat challenging Senator Funke, and it's nice to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, before we have that conversation with Jen Lunsford, let me welcome Randy Gorman, news director from across the hall at WXXI.
Hi, Evan. This is really one of our favorite times of year, as people like to say in the news business. It's kind of like our Super Bowl, I guess, having Election Day coming up. But really, it's so important what we do here at WXXI because we do try to be an important part of the community in bringing you information so you can decide what you want to do on Election Day and bring you information like this along the way. We are also holding our fall campaign drive right now, and we could use your help to continue this kind of programming. The number to call, if you have a minute right now, is 454-6300, 454-6300. If you're out of town, 1-800-295-9994, 1-800-295-9994, or you can make a donation right through the new WXXI mobile app or online at WXXINews.org or WEOS.org. Please continue to support programming like this that brings you the information you need to continue being a good citizen of this area and of the U.S.
All right. Thank you, Randy Gorman, news director from WXXI. So Jen Lunsford is running for the state Senate. And before the brief program began, I said, my research wasn't wrong, right? Never held elective office. So this is the first time.
It is.
And so in a moment, we'll talk about why you're aiming for a state Senate seat. But let's talk about your background, because you did not grow up in the Rochester area. Where'd you grow up?
I'm originally from Long Island, though I went to college at Hartwick and Oneonta. I really haven't lived on Long Island since I was 18. So I went to college for 4 years there. Then I bounced around a little bit, went to law school at Boston University, and then I settled here in the Rochester area in 2009. I followed my husband, who is a Pittsford native. He was a graduate of Pittsford Sutherland.
Are you one of those people who thought, well, we'll come for 3 years and oops, you're going to live the rest of your life here?
I think I came kind of to see how it was, if it was the kind of place I'd like. And I very quickly realized, oh, this is it. This is where I want to be.
Well, you're aiming for a state Senate seat. And I want to ask why you've decided to run for that seat. Now, you're working as an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a two-year-old at home. Balancing a lot of things here.
Yes.
And by the way, I'm not the kind of guy who only says balancing a lot of things to mothers. Dads do it too. It's a great thing as a father of a young child myself. But you've been an attorney for how long?
I have been in practice almost 10 years now.
Okay. And what kind of practice do you do?
Right now, for the last 7 years, I've been a plaintiff-side personal injury, workers' compensation, and Social Security disability attorney. So I work with sick and disabled people.
When did you decide you wanted to run for office?
I think following the 2016 election, my son was 8 weeks old on Election Day in 2016, and I expected him to be born into, you know, one kind of world, and it didn't work out that way. So over the course of the next year and a half, I got, you know, very involved politically, more so. I'd previously done a lot of community service work, but my attentions turned more political and people were encouraging me. They were saying, you're the kind of voice we'd like to see representing us. And eventually through, I joke that it's a year and a half of cyberbullying me into running for office, I started thinking about it more and more. And then around December of 2017, I thought, all right, this is it.
Would you find yourself in this position if the 2016 election had been won by Hillary Clinton?
I don't think I would, because I never saw myself as the person out front. I had more of a policy interest, more of an advisory interest. But I think I quickly learned that I'm well suited to this. You know, the work that I do now, working with people from a very diverse set of backgrounds, injury and illness doesn't discriminate. So I deal with doctors and construction workers, teachers and waitresses, people from all different kinds of educational and socioeconomic backgrounds. And I see what life is like for them. You know, I see what it feels like to live all sorts of different kinds of lives. And in doing that, I see that we all want the same things. We all have the same goals. We just disagree about how to get there. And I think that background made me well suited to this sort of role.
Why do you think you were surprised by the results in 2016? Were you, like a lot of people, believe the polls? I mean, did you think that this country was, as you said, you woke up and literally felt like you were in a different country than you thought you were in?
Yeah. I think, like a lot of people, not only did I think the polls lead us a certain way, but I thought that we lived in a country that valued respect and empathy more than perhaps I do. You know, or I think that we elected a person who is fundamentally ill-suited to the presidency and who does not have the experience, the skills, or the temperament for the job. And it didn't seem to me like that was a foreseeable outcome. So when it happened, I was very taken aback.
Okay. And you're running for state senate. There's a lot of different seats you could choose to run for. Why this one?
Because I have a very limited amount of time. And when I get involved in something, I want to have the largest impact possible. And when I looked at our community, I said, where could my skills and experience serve us best? The state Senate has such a narrow majority of Republicans. If we flip this seat, we could flip the entire state Senate. That seemed really high impact. And I felt like I could do that.
Talking to Jen Lensford, who is challenging Rich Funke for his state Senate seat, and her website is votejenlensford.com. We ask all candidates to tell us their website. We share them with all listeners if the candidates will come on, and we're hoping Senators Funke, Robach, and a number of other incumbents who have not been able to make time for the program, we're hoping that changes before Election Day. Have you had the chance to debate him on other venues?
I have not. We sent a number of letters and emails and have received no response. However, I did just learn yesterday that he apparently plans to be at a candidate forum at URMC on Monday, hosted by the League of Women Voters. So I'm very excited for that.
I mean, I know Rich just sort of through broadcasting circles and just in terms of on the personal side, he's a nice person. Are you surprised you haven't heard back at all?
I'm not. Traditionally, incumbents don't debate it. It isn't something that I think people do unless they feel like they need to or if they are particularly committed to just democracy generally. They feel like they should. If I were elected, I would plan to debate into the future anyone who challenged me because I think that it's important. But it does not surprise me that he would not want to appear in an adversarial forum.
Do you generally vote a straight ticket Democrat?
Historically, I have. Sometimes in local races and judicial races, I might change. But it's just where my values lie. It's not because of a partisan bent, but because more of where my personal philosophy and politics are, the Democratic candidate is generally the one that aligns best with me.
Okay, but it's not impossible for you to envision a Republican member of the legislature and saying, hey, I think they're actually doing a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Okay, so you don't feel that way with Rich Funke. What are your issues with Rich Funke?
Well, I think, again, Rich Funke's a nice enough guy. But in 4 years, he's never held a town hall. He's never held a public forum. He is not open, in my experience, to meeting with people who disagree with him. I have spent more time standing on the street yelling at his front door than speaking directly to him. In fact, I had never spoken to him until I started running against him. I think that his, well, I believe that he personally and philosophically genuinely believes what he believes. I don't think that he is pretending. I think that his values are out of line with the people of this district. This district has a 22,000 Democrat enrollment advantage. It went for Hillary by 18 points. It should be represented by someone who better reflects the views of the people who live here.
So what is priority one if you go to Albany in the state Senate?
So I think given what we're seeing in the Supreme Court, passing the Reproductive Health Act is very important to me. Also making sure that we get a clean bill for APPR reform for our teachers through. Those are some things that should have been able to pass at the end of last term that didn't get through.
Let's talk about those individually and starting with the Reproductive Health Act. I think it's a pretty strong assumption that a lot of people have that Roe's going to get overturned. Obviously, we don't know that, and there's still a lot of speculation there, but it's certainly possible now with the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh, and we could see that in the next, I mean, as soon as, you know, 2 to 3 years, if there's a case that gets there. And if that happens, it's, you know, there's a lot of unanswered questions, but assuming it happens in the way that would send it, quote-unquote, back to the states to really sort of run the rules there, you could have 20 states overnight where abortion is not legal. And then you'd have New York. But, you know, I remember talking to Rob Astorino when he was running for governor, 4 years ago now, and he said, you're never going to have to worry about abortion in this state. It's New York State. It's the law of the land, and New York State would never. He said it's a red herring. Why are we even talking about this? What do you think?
I think that there's a misunderstanding about what the state of the law is in New York. New York was one of the first states to legalize abortion in 1970, pre-Roe. And in doing so, what they did was they modified the penal code. We're actually one of the few states, I think it's only Wisconsin and us, who still regulates abortion through the penal code instead of the health code. In New York, it is permissible to have abortions up to 24 weeks, and then there are no protections following that except for life of the mother. So protections in New York for health of the mother or for terminal fetal abnormalities simply don't exist. We read them in from the case law federally. In fact, even right now, if you found out that you were in some way threatened, you would become disabled as a result of your pregnancy, or you unfortunately had a fetus with a terminal issue, you'd have to leave the state to get the kind of care that you need. People often go to Colorado. And we need to codify here at the state level the protections that we've been reading in federally to ensure that everyone has the options that we as a state believe we should have.
Fair to say you think that abortion is going to be an issue, state and federal, in terms of debate now that we have this confirmation going forward for a while now?
Yes, absolutely. I have been a lifelong advocate for reproductive justice issues, and I have never been as nervous as I am right now.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about the experience in your own family? I know you lost your dad, and I want to talk a little bit about healthcare, how you view it. Did that impact your thoughts on healthcare at all?
It probably solidified for me a little bit more. My father had a number of disabilities. He had congestive heart failure, chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder. He was a vet, and he had some mental health issues as well, some addiction problems. And I'll tell you that if it wasn't for VA benefits, my dad would not have walked me down the aisle. He would not have seen me graduate from law school. And it's because he had access to free healthcare. And I know that, especially the kind of guy that he was, even with the healthcare, it was hard enough to get him to the doctor. He was in the hospital for 7 weeks before he died. He, like many people, spent almost all of his lifetime healthcare costs in the last 2 months of his life. It was very, very expensive. No one should have to consider whether or not to get treatment based on whether they could afford it. I'll tell you, my dad had his heart attack on my 21st birthday, and he did not go to the hospital for 2 days because he didn't want to pay the ER copay. And by the time he got to the hospital, 40% of his heart was dead tissue because he'd waited to go. I think I'd still have my dad today if he'd gone a little bit earlier.
Wow. Now, I've had a number of phone calls and emails over the years from conservative listeners who will take issue with your characterization of your father having gotten, quote, free health care. They will say there is no such thing, that there is a cost, and that we ought not minimize what it would cost if we're going to change systems here. What would you say to them?
I think that's valid, that of course we're paying for it. And I think that if we are going to have a real conversation about changing what healthcare looks like in this country, we have to accept that it's going to be a cost. But I think it's a cost that we should be willing to bear. We need to invest in people. And healthcare is really the foundation of all things. If our children are healthy, they learn better. They become functional adults. They become healthy members of the workforce. Our seniors are dependent on a Medicare program that is being threatened right now in Washington. They are paying too much for prescriptions. They're paying too much for doctor's visits. We need to invest in human beings so that as a society, we can focus on other things.
All right. So what kind of healthcare system at New York State at the state level?
So I am a proponent of the New York Health Act, which is a single payer system. I think, especially given my experience in the work that I do, I often deal with competing insurance systems. So I might have a client that, say, drives for work, and they're involved in a car accident while they're working. Their no-fault insurance would kick in because they were in a car accident, but so would workers' compensation. And in that situation, workers' comp acts as the first-party payer for no-fault. But then they also have their private insurance through their employer. I have clients in that situation who can't get treatment because people are fighting about who's going to pay. That's three separate insurance companies that they have who are covering their medical costs, and they can't get treatment because all three are trying to burst through the door at the same time. It's a ridiculous system. We need to figure out ways to make it easier for people to get access to healthcare.
So let's talk a little bit about your own party then at the state level. Mm-hmm. And if that's a priority for you, I'm curious to know if you are a Cuomo or Nixon voter in the primary.
I was a Cuomo voter. And the reason I was a Cuomo voter, even though my personal politics probably aligned more with Nixon, I do not think that your first job in politics should be as the head executive of the 12th largest economy in the world. I think it came down fundamentally to a lack of experience for me. I don't think that she should have, you know, needed to run for dog catcher or anything. I'm obviously running for state senate as a first-time candidate. But being the head executive of anything, whether it is the country or the state, shouldn't be your first foray into public service.
Well, then Stephanie Miner would say then if you aligned with Cynthia Nixon's politics but not her experience, you ought to be voting for Miner in November. Are you going to vote for Miner?
I am... probably still going to lean Cuomo because I think that it is important, again, even though I think we do disagree on some issues, that as a party, we unite at this time on all houses of the legislature and in the governor's office to stand up against what we're seeing coming out of Washington.
Okay. I do think voters like to know if you can sort of be and I'm sure you feel you can be an independent operator, that, you know, the party unity matters, but also an independent voice matters. Where has the party or where has Cuomo gone wrong?
I think that ever since Chris Collins was indicted, the number of people who said corruption at the doors to me as an issue that's motivating to them has tripled.
Wow.
And I think that we're really motivated as a community, as a state, and as a country to start making real changes. I personally... I'm not taking corporate money, except the law firm I work for gave me $500. But besides that, I am not taking corporate money. And I know that the governor and I disagree a bit about that. But I think we need to close the LLC loophole. I think we need to lower the individual maximum donation levels. You can give me $11,000 as an individual person who doesn't know me. That's bonkers. That's a crazy amount of money. But that's the system that we're working within.
Why is that crazy?
Federally, you can only give the president $2,700. $11,000 is far more than the average person can afford to give to a political candidate. And I think it gives outside influence to people who have better financial resources.
Yeah, but prominent Democrats in this city, in this county, in the state have said, well, yeah, I take that kind of money, but that would never color my vote. It would never influence me in any way. And I'm offended you would even ask it that. You're implying that money does influence votes.
I think that I don't think you're necessarily owned by the people who donate to you. But I think that the idea that it doesn't buy access is incorrect. I think if someone gives you money, they might get your ear, whereas someone else might not.
I want to remind our listeners, Jen Lunsford, our guest for this half hour, Jeremy Cooney, next half hour, two Democrats running for state Senate. We invited and worked as hard as we could to get the incumbents, two Republicans, Rich Funke and Joe Robach, to join us with their opponents, but have not been able to get the incumbents to come join us. And I know both of those senators, and I would hope that in the future we'll have a chance to hear from them, especially before the election, but so far have not been able to do that. So it's votejenlunsford.com if you want to learn more. We have a few minutes left with the candidates, so let's hit a number of topics and, you know, I don't know if rapid fire, but let's move. Canada just legalized marijuana recreationally. Should New York State?
Yes. Yes, I think we should.
Well, that was it. why yes?
For me personally, the marijuana issue is more of a criminal justice issue. The amount of people who are disproportionately affected by the enforcement of marijuana laws are people of color or low-income people. But if we look at it just as a revenue stream, we have a lot of things we need to pay for in this state, and we need to lower the property tax burden on people. We need to find new streams of revenue. And if you're looking at states like Colorado that are much smaller than New York, they have made enormous amounts of tax dollars. I think that we could legalize marijuana here and not just increase jobs and tax revenue, but it would be a bit of a tourism draw, considering that we would be the only state in this region with legalized recreational marijuana.
Okay. On the subject of minimum wage, you have written about favoring $15 for upstate. I know you have occasionally heard perspective from whether it's organizations like Unshackle Upstate or occasionally small business owners who are concerned, farms, et cetera, about what that would do to them. Is there a legitimate concern for small businesses when they say they don't know that they can't afford a $15 wage?
I think that is a legitimate concern, and I'm never going to tell someone that it's not legitimate. But again, I think we as a society need to start investing in people, and we need our workers to have livable wages so that they can not just subsist, but that they can buy things and put money back into our economy. I think if you're working at a restaurant, you should be able to afford to eat there.
Okay. It's too hard to vote in this state.
Yes.
What would you change?
Oh, do we have another half hour for me to talk about this? I am a proponent of early voting. I would love to start voting next week, like a lot of other states are. Same day voter registration, automatic voter registration. And something that I don't think gets enough press is no excuse absentee voting. You could vote by mail. Absentee ballots this year, actually at presidential year levels, the amount of people who are voting by absentee.
School funding, where do you see the state's commitment right now? What would you like to see change?
I think we need to fully fund our foundation aid program. I think that we kind of launched that. We spent a lot of money figuring out our formulas and then never fully funded it.
What was that? I mean, in the mid-2000s,
yes.
Right? But I think, again, the argument against that would be, and I think it was in the Patterson era, we had this big economic downturn. We did what we could. And maybe we've never gotten back to that level, but we've grown since the downturn, and it's unrealistic to try to fill the gap now. What do you say to that?
Well, I think a lot of people tell you, you know, we do have record school funding, but the disparities exist. I mean, this particular district, I would represent East High and Pittsford Sutherland, West Irondequoit and North Bristol. The diversity in the school funding and the educational quality in this district is a microcosm of the whole state. Mm-hmm. And I think that if I can solve some of that disparity here in this small region, that we could then extrapolate that out to the rest of the state.
I know you're concerned about climate change, but be specific. What, especially with the IPCC report, which says we are in more trouble more quickly than we thought, what can you do as a legislator? What can you support that's realistic on the state level, and how soon can we accomplish it?
So, I mean, that's extremely concerning. We here in Western New York are ahead of the state in terms of meeting the Paris Accord goals of 50% renewables by 2030 because we get so much of our energy already from renewable resources. Really investing in wind. We have a lot of wind opportunities here, making it easier for wind and solar to expand. Maybe trying to tie that in some ways to our struggling farms that are having issues with the tariffs to make it easier for them to diversify into green energy, since they own a lot of land. I think we can meet a lot of needs by really focusing on climate change, not just as a goal, but as an industry.
Gun control or gun laws, are you a fan of the SAFE Act? Would you change it in any way? And what would you change in terms of gun legislation at the state level?
So I've been rated a Moms Demand Action Gun Sense candidate, and people can Google that term to learn a little bit more about it. But I think that there are some common sense gun violence prevention measures that we can take here. You know, I'm an attorney. I respect the Second Amendment. I won the Dean's Award for constitutional law when I was in law school. I fully understand the Second Amendment. But we can ban bump stocks here. We can create extreme risk protection orders to make sure that people who are a risk to themselves and to others can be protected from the danger that they're posing themselves. I think we need to expand universal background checks. And I will tell you that, you know, as an attorney who practices in outlying counties, I hear from judges sometimes that they can't tell if someone's had a permit revoked in a neighboring county because they're relying on self-reporting from the person requesting the gun permit. We need to, I think, update and modernize our records to make it easier to determine what people's permit status is.
Should we be allowed to own semi-automatics at home?
You know, I am open to that. I know that I personally don't see a need for hunting purposes for people to own what are colloquially referred to as assault rifles based on the federal definition of that. I understand that that's not a real industry definition. But I also hear from a lot of people that it's important to them and it's commonly used in other states. I am willing to have a conversation about it.
Okay. And last question, within your own party, I think we saw in the primaries earlier this year, whether it was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Gillum in Florida, different candidates in different places, taking the party in the direction, more in the direction of where Bernie Sanders probably was during the primaries in 2016 than Hillary Clinton. And there's conversations about democratic socialism, which isn't socialism per se. It's a different thing. But it's a conversation about the health of capitalism. Is capitalism a force for good?
I don't think capitalism itself is inherently evil. I think it probably it opens people up to abuse, but so does socialism. I mean, if we're going to talk about just political theories. But I think more of a conscious capitalism perspective is more aligned with my my personal values.
It's votejenlunsford.com. If you win, I do hope you'll come back with some routine here.
I would be happy to.
I do appreciate that. And we want to let our listeners know that her opponent, the incumbent, Rich Funke, has been invited on this program not only alongside Jen Lunsford, but we're hoping to convince him to come on the program. I know he's got a busy schedule, but sometime before the election, we've opened up our schedule, so we hope to do that. So our thanks to Jen Lunsford. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Short break, and Jeremy Cooney, another candidate for State Senate, next on Connections.